Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, podcast audience. This is your guy, Ken Hodge, on Blog Talk Radio, Hodge to Hodge Podcast. And as always, on Wednesday morning, we have the distinct pleasure of having Mr. Anthony Norris from Blue Collar Consultants. He takes time out of his week every Thursday to join me on the podcast and help me educate and inform postal and federal employees on their rights with respect to FICA and injury compensation. Good morning, Mr. Norris. How are you today?
Good morning, sir. Thanks for having me again this week. I appreciate it.
Like I said, I you can't really judge by the number of people who actually call in and listen to the podcast, but I can tell the effectiveness because when I go to work, I hear questions about what we spoke on. So again, what we do here is a benefit. It may not show as big right now, but if we can help one postal employee or one federal employee, I think we've done a great thing. Postal employees, before we get directly into injury compensation, I'm going to let Mr. Norris start off with a little contact information. And Mr. Norris, if the folks in Columbus, Ohio, want to try to meet with you, how can we make that happen?
Sure. I travel around the country quite a bit because we service in quite a few markets. I am scheduled to be in Columbus the week of September the 4th through September the 7th. So that Tuesday after the holiday to that Friday, I'll be in town. I do have a couple of clients to meet with who want to talk to me face-to-face about their claims and what the expectations are. So if you would like to meet with me face-to-face and I'll sit down and give you a one-on-one time, you can reach out to me directly at 713-256-2089. Say, hey, Anthony, I would like to sit down and talk to you about either a claim I need to file, a claim I already have, or a claim that was denied. Either three of those options I can assist you with. So if you prefer to meet me face-to-face versus telephone, which, by the way, I do a lot of video conferencing too, so we don't necessarily have to wait for me to be in a respective city in order for us to have a face-to-face conversation. So I always provide different options of communication. But I will be in the Columbus, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio market that week. I want to say my schedule has me in Columbus the first 2.5 days and Cleveland the next 2 days. So I would love to meet with you guys face-to-face and answer any questions you may have. Because I know some people, you know, prefer to talk in a private setting. So my office is in Easton, Columbus. So I think that's relatively centrally located. I've had quite a few of you meet me at my office. So we can do that as well. We have options.
Well, it's funny that talk about schedules crisscrossing. While you're in Columbus, I'll be in Cleveland. While you're in Cleveland, I'll be back in Columbus. But, yeah, during that time that you're here, because I definitely like meeting up with you, man. It's always a pleasure to learn a little bit more about something I thought I knew. But while you're in Columbus, I'll be in an executive meeting with the branch presidents in Cleveland. So when I get back, the way I think some of my branch president buddies are really pissed off with me, so when I come back from Cleveland, I might need to call you, man. No, I'm just joking, but I know they're not really happy with me, but I'm just joking about need an injury conversation to help when I get back. We are professionals. But again, while you're here, I'm there. And hopefully we can get one day in the middle where we can get together and sit down and break bread.
I like again, to do that.
Oh, yeah. It's always a pleasure whenever you come to town, brother. And it's, you know, before we even start hitting on the true subject matter, let me just put out to postal employees. And as I always say, Mr. Norris's area of expertise is much broader than I ever expect to have. He deals with all federal. Me personally, I only focus in on a little slice of that, and that slice really being postal employees. I give 80% of that to mail handlers, but I also assist clerks and carriers. But let me just say this. The United States, this is going to sound crazy, but if you will just slow down a little bit and listen, I guarantee it'll make sense. The United States Postal Service has operational plans in place that kind of direct you to work safe. Now, listen to me very carefully. We as employees, more times than not, violate the SOP on safe working practices and thereby creating claims. Then once the postal manager who understands and allows you to constantly break those work practices, once he gets a claim, now he's a little frustrated. And then because he's frustrated, he or she is frustrated, your claim doesn't get the proper attention it should get always. And again, that's when you come to see me, all I say to you is contact Mr. Norris. I'm going to move you to the subject matter expert. But again, the most important aspect of what I just said to you is if you would understand the proper way to do your job and do it in that manner, you yourself would eliminate a lot of accidents in the workplace. And I know a lot of you might say, well, what are you talking about, Mr. Hodge? That's not true. It is true. And if I could just take 30 more seconds, every day at work, when I walk out on the dock, I see brand new mail handlers pulling 2 and 3 APCs. Now, you think you're doing that to be effective, but if I was your supervisor, I'd probably sit down and talk to you about safe work practices. Postal policy, postal regulations state, if you are not on a motorized piece of equipment, you should only move one piece of equipment at a time. Now, you think you're being Superman or Superwoman by moving three, and then when you get injured, you want to get mad at the agency because they're not catering to you. Well, listen to me, employees. Even though Mr. Norris gives us great information on how to file claims, how to follow up claims, I'm trying to give you some different information that if you will listen, you may never need a claim. You may never need a claim. And that brings me to my first question for you today, Mr. Norris. It's from a MHA. MHA is a mail handler assistant, not really considered a career employee. They're in the stages. They're on the waiting line as regulars leave through attrition or through manpower needs. MHAs, mail handler assistants, are created or converted to regular employees. And the question is, do you have to be a regular employee to be covered by FICA?
No, sir. If your checks are written, the checks written to you are from the United States government, you are entitled to benefits. Period. End of story.
So, again, in the post office, we pretty much have two sub-classifications and then one regular classification. When I say sub-classification, I mean sub being below regular, not below human. Let's keep that in mind. Sub being casuals and MHAs. Then you have the career status of being a regular or career employee. So as long as if I am a casual, if I am a MHA, not a career employee, and I get injured at work, are my options or my benefits the same as, and in fact, do I get the 45-day COP? Is all that available to me also?
Absolutely, because at the end of the day, you know, it's even more likely that you'll probably get hurt in the beginning stages, depending on the job description, because you're inexperienced. And at the end of the day, you're going to get the same benefits as someone who's been there 20 years, because you now work for the United States government. So when it comes to accidents, there's just no way around it. You know, one thing about the United States government, the laws that they have in place is to protect its own. So you may not be fully vested on the eyes of your agency looked at as what you call subpar, referring to the career position. You still is a United States government employee, and that's where your checks are coming from, and those benefits are tied to it.
Oh, okay, and again, just for the benefit of the audience listening, when we say sub or subpar, I'm only trying to differentiate between different classes of employment. You have the career, then you have MHAs, and then you have casuals. So sometimes when I heard the playback and heard the word subpar, let me explain this to my members, that when we say subpar, not subpar, we're just talking about subcategories. If you're not a career, you're either going to be an MHA or a casual. And I'm addressing the MHA and casual status right now so they understand if you're at work and you're working. And again, I want you to start focusing, putting a greater focus on working safe. Stop working in a rush. Work safe. So if you're working safe and you're at work and you receive an injury, you have all FICA rights as if you worked at that facility for 1,000 years. So and I know for a fact that is not being communicated to the non-career workforce. In fact, I know for a fact that the non-career workforce are being told, you file that claim, well, we don't need you anymore. Now, that's another subject, probably one you and a lawyer need to talk about. But I just want you to understand that even if you're not a career employee, the fact that you work at the post office and sustained an injury, the post office covers that under FICA law. Would that be correct, sir?
Yeah. Yes. Let me say this to you. In the private sector, that holds more true than it does in the government sector. Okay? And then let's keep this in mind. At the end of the day, it's business. And if you were to put yourself in a position of employer, you would want to send that message to new hires also, that, hey, you're brand new and we're not going to release full benefits to you until your probationary period is over. Because at the end of the day, I don't want to invest too much money into you, and I really don't know what I have yet. So I'm not going to release all the benefits, give you all the money, until you prove otherwise. Well, with the government, it's a little bit different because of the hiring process of qualifying to even become a government employee. Once you're in, you're in. So the agency, from their perspective, is going to put information out there that's really like a deterrent. And again, it's just business. It's not personal. So they're going to tell you that because at the end of the day, they don't want to put more money into a new hire in form of health benefits. And like you mentioned, a CA-1 especially, because all CA-1 money come out of the agency's budget. It's not until day 46 where it comes from the DOL. So if you understand that from an agency standpoint, and I'm not trying to talk for the agency or against it, it's just information, you are qualified to receive those benefits. Now, they're not going to be happy with it if, you know, a new hire comes in and gets hurt right away and it's a CA-1 or whatnot. But at the same time, you know, that individual will be covered.
I appreciate that, Mr. Norris. Another question that someone brought to my attention last week was, what is leave buyback? Could you explain leave buyback?
Sure. When you get injured on the job and you, let's say most of the time, especially with postal workers, you guys are forced to use your leave until that claim is actually mitigated. So being the fact that you use your leave to cover your basically your income until your benefit kicked in, you get to basically exchange that lead back for the monies that you receive while you were on some type of sick leave, whether it's full duty. I mean, you were completely off work or you were partially off work. So you get a chance to get, you don't lose that lead just because you used it while you were out.
So if I had to leave, if I had to use my leave because my claim hadn't kicked in yet, you're saying once my claim is accepted, all my personal time, whether it be sick leave or annual leave that I used to cover my paycheck while I was out, all that will be given back to me?
Yes.
Okay. And that's a beautiful thing.
But you're not, but make sure you understand that you're not coming out ahead. It works out
right
to about evenly. Yeah,
it works out, if I'm wrong, it works out to the point where you don't have to use your time to cover an injury that the government or through FICA laws will cover or would have covered. You just use your time as a stopgap, so to speak, so your paychecks continue. But once everything is accepted, claim number assigned, they're willing to give that back to you. That kind of how it works?
It will. Yeah, but not just the claim of being assigned. I mean, your claim actually being approved.
Being approved and accepted, okay.
Right. Reason why I say that is because everyone gets a claim number as soon as they file a claim. But that doesn't mean anything yet, okay? So that's why I want to make sure we understand the difference.
Okay. And last week, we left off with the talking about that CA-7. Would that be the form you use for leave buyback? Or is
no,
that a separate
CA-7,
form?
Yeah, that's separate. That's separate. The CA-7s, again, that's used for your compensation when you're off from work. Let's say you're going to therapy 2-3 times a week. It's more or less to serve as proof that you're going to therapy. It's also proof that the income you should be receiving from your time away from work, you're getting it through the submission of your CA-7. So, again, it's another avenue, if you will, to make sure you guys are getting paid while you're going through the injury comp process.
Yeah, sorry about that. We're good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, and again, employees, we get together.
Can I do this?
Go ahead, sir.
Too?
Yeah.
One thing I like to do is give you guys information by statute or by what's available to you. So when it comes to let me just say it to you like this. A claim with an approved claim may buy back leave. However, OWCP pays either 75% if you have dependents, 66 2/3 if you do not. So it's not about your gross salary. It's about, you know, that net, if you will. So it works out to where it's close to the paycheck you would get. You know, you get paid and you pay your taxes and whatnot. It all balances out the same. I've had that question come up, too. People think they're actually making money if they're on completely disabled from work or whatnot, and you're not. So we want to make sure that we understand that it's 75% if you have dependents, 66 2/3 if you do not, of your salary when you calculate your leave buyback.
Hey, Mr. Norris, could you repeat that percentage again? Your voice kind of broke up a little bit, and I want them to hear that clearly.
Okay. When it comes to compensation, the Department of Labor is paying you 75% of your base salary, not including overtime, if you have dependents. It's 66 2/3 if you do not have dependents. And the way it works out is like your gross pay minus taxes. Okay, so it works out to be about the same. So your checks are about the same when it comes to getting that compensation as opposed to you actually making money. So some people think about being hurt, you know, that they're actually winning, and they're really not.
Okay.
It is not a retirement program or even a welfare program. It's designed basically to hold you over, you know, until you get back full time.
And again, if we are being honest with ourselves, one should not look to make money getting hurt thinking you got a scam going. See, again, and when you get hurt at work and you start calculating, I make more money by not going to work, and that's not what this podcast is about, folks. This podcast is about giving you good, wholesome information so that when injuries occur, we give you the procedure to follow. Let me ask you this. I got one more question for you. When I hear employees or doctors or whoever recommends injured employees the term, when I hear the term MMI being maximum medical improvement, are you familiar with that term?
I am.
And what does that mean? That means that employee is not going to get any better?
Right. It's basically meaning after all rehab and other medical practices are exhausted on a particular body part, and that body part is just not getting any better. It has reached its maximum ability based on rehabilitation. And at that point, that's when you can apply for what they call the schedule award. Now, you have to go see another physician to get an impairment rating to find out exactly what the rating is for the capacity of that body part. And then the federal government basically releases a schedule award to you for that body part, being that it'll never be able to reach 100% again. And the only thing it doesn't cover is brain and spine. So most of your mechanicals it does, but brain and spine are not covered by schedule awards. Or you can't get a schedule award.
I just try to summarize or recap what you said. So my understanding, if I'm hurt at work, I go through the process, I'm going through treatment, and I reach what they call the MMI, maximum medical improvement. At that point, I'm going to see another, so the post office can settle up with me or compensate me on a one-time basis for the loss of that limb. That happens. How does that affect my employment now?
Well, chances are you've been working on some type of light duty in some type of light duty capacity anyway. So this is now your new 100%. So you may have a new job that they assign you to. You may, depending on how your claim goes, if you've been out of what you were originally hired for some time, you may have a vocational rep talk to you about retraining you to work in another department. So there's a couple different ways it will go depending upon that person's situation. So it's not just cookie cutting the same across the board. It really depends on your job duties, job description rather, and what the actual injury is. So all that plays a role into it.
Okay, so this morning we discussed a few things, one of the most important things I like to say about this morning's conversation is that we have to work safe. We have to take care of ourselves, because I'm telling you, nobody is going to care for you like you. And when I say that, I'm speaking again directly to my postal family. If you continue to go at work, to be at work, and you continue to think, I'm going to work unsafe so that I can be more productive for a supervisor who is going to fire you when you get injured, come on, let's rethink that. Let's still, and again, and I don't want to take this out of context, because I don't want anybody to ever think that I'm telling you to lay down on the job. I'm telling you, let's do the job the way the job is designed. And again, with respect to moving equipment on our platforms, if you are on your feet, you should only be moving one piece of equipment. Post office teaches you that. And every day on the dock, I see new mail handlers violating that. Now, and you got to understand, postal management is not going to stop you from violating that. But if you get injured, you're going to see the true colors and you're going to be upset, and you have absolutely no reason to be upset. So we talked about leave buyback. If you are injured at work, your claim has not been approved or not been totally accepted, you can use your leave until your claim is accepted. And then, with the exception of the first 3 days, because in the Postal Service, the first 3 days you're going to use your leave, and to the best of my knowledge, that 3 days isn't part of the buyback plan. That's just something in the post office. Okay, I was going to say, or they've been duping us on that for years also. But the first
no.
three. Yeah, okay. If you only know what postal, the agency has taught you, you don't know a lot. I'm telling you right now, you don't know a lot. So when you get to interact with outside entities who have the same federal laws and understandings, you find out how much you don't know. So again, if you get hurt at work the first 3 days in the post office, you have to use your leave. And then if you have to continue using your leave, you go on the leave buyback program. Now, let me ask you a question, Mr. Norris. What if you're using leave without pay? Is that the same thing?
Kind of, sort of, is a fine line, only because let's say you don't have enough leave in order to cover yourself while you're out injured. Then leave without pay, it can get really, really sticky for you. So it's not quite the same in that manner. Leave without pay, which a lot of people are in that situation, have to find other means to hold themselves together until their benefits kick in. So a lot of times it happens with some of these CA2s that I see, that these people off work and they really don't have any other income coming in. So some of these situations, you're just kind of a victim of circumstance. So I do want people to understand that there's no design, just safety net in place for every situation out there.
Okay. And again, it's good to know, because when we talk about leave buyback, leave without pay is a form of leave, but you have, again, it says just what it says, without pay. So if I'm taking 3 weeks leave without pay, as I understand it, and as I would be willing to try or submit documentation, I'm still entitled to those 3 weeks of compensation. That's what I would think. Now, again, this is why I always send them to see Mr. Norris, because what I think don't make it federal law.
Right. So I mean, at the end of the day, if you're hurt and you're off from work, leave without pay, and once your benefits are approved to be released to you, lost wages could be a part of that. So you will be reimbursed for the lost wages that you had at that time. It's just finding means to an end until that claim is open and accepted.
Oh, all right. Hey, listen, we're down to 60 seconds before we sign off of this podcast this morning. And I again, just want to always thank you, brother, for finding time for us on Thursday morning. And when I say for us, again, I speak federally, but I represent postal employees. So I do thank you for finding the time, helping me keep my members informed. And with that, I'll give you a couple of seconds to, again, just give our members a reminder of where you're going to be or and how they can possibly stay in touch with you.
Yes. Again, I'll be in Columbus the week of September the 4th to be September the 7th. And you can always call me directly at 713-566-2089. And I look forward to letting you know if you need my help with following the plane, managing existing plane, or following the field.
All right. I thank you, my brother. And everybody have a wonderful day. And we'll see you next Thursday morning. Take care and be safe.
Bye-bye.